When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is the audio version of the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. You can watch the video version and take part in a future episode by going to patreon.com/cultaholic.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The fucking Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
Come on!
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready!
Oh, hell yeah!
It's gonna be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
The Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. Who be we? I be Fake Johnny, radio presenter without portfolio, Tom Campbell, joined by resident WCW kid Sam Driver, who, like me, is back in 1996. And if you are watching on the Patreon, what a boat race you get to examine there. Are you all right, mate?
Good things.
Have you had a time?
Yeah. It's been an interesting old day, isn't it? I don't know what I can possibly do right now to stop myself losing my mind at the prospect of our country melting into nothingness.
You're all right there.
Yeah, I think that's all I can really possibly do right now. Energy prices are going up again.
Hooray!
Yeah,
I was 800 worried.
Quid more.
I was worried that I wasn't spending enough.
No,
on
me
my
either.
Energy.
Me either. And you know, it's fucking great. I think that we should all be paying for everything all of the time through the nose. If you've only got 20 quid spare at the end of the month, then you can't buy an iPhone or a TV or cigarettes like, you know, the politicians tell us is the problem. That's the reason we're not millionaires, Tom. It's all those cigarettes you keep buying.
I just think I have this lavish lifestyle where sometimes I like to go cinema.
You put the cigarettes in your ears because they're very good, you know, at blocking out sound. But maybe you should just not now.
I should just not block out the sound.
I'm thinking I should just, you know, like, just give my entire salary to the government and say, you know what's best for me, buddy. Let's watch some wrestling and go back to a simpler time, please.
What's nice is that all the classic reviews have very different flavors.
Yeah.
There's a salty spiciness to these.
The problem is these usually take place right after PMQ. So I'm just like... like, I know people on both sides of the fence, the major sides of the fence anyway, and they all agree. Mm. Why are people still giving him a buy? Why? Mm-hmm. Why? He's fucking all of us.
Do you know who else knows people on both sides of the fence?
Mean Gene?
No.
Bobby?
No.
Mongo,
no,
maybe.
No. The postman from Home Improvement.
Yay! It's been so long since I've watched Home Improvement.
Yeah, I don't know why I was thinking about it the day, and I remember there was a SNES game.
Oh, yeah. Everything had a game back then, though. I'm amazed there wasn't like a Seinfeld game and stuff.
There wasn't, was there?
No, somebody made a VR version of Jerry's apartment you could go into, which was pretty cool.
I tell you what I've been watching lately, and you've put me onto it there. I mentioned this on the
PMQ. Just go off on your own rant.
There's a great YouTube channel called Hats Off Entertainment.
Yeah.
And they're doing a series called The Seinfeld Curse.
Yes.
It's all about the awful sitcoms that everybody from Seinfeld went on to do. That just flopped.
I think it's the same, though, with anybody who's a major star in anything, to be honest. Like, if it's a major show and a major deal, you're always kind of... And especially if it's long running, you're going to be typecast as that person unless you're like a breakout mega star. At that point, you eclipse the show and everybody else in it.
Like Kelsey Grammer.
Yeah, it's sort of like it goes one of two ways. Either everybody just kind of wanders off into like a strange career, or one person is just like the mega star and everybody else is like, whatever happened to that guy?
Yeah, it's so true. Yeah. It's so true. The only thing is that the only sitcom I can think off the top of my head that truly had a character that transcended it is Frasier.
Yeah, Fraser, I mean, but yeah, Fraser obviously cheers and that all ballooned into its own show. Joey tried, with friends and it sucked ass, bless it. But
I don't know if Alex and I, my good lady, whether we've ever watched Joey.
I think I tried to watch a few episodes once and I don't think I had the patience to kind of sit down and go with it. It'd be one of those times where I'd like go to CEX hungover with like £3 in my pocket, just being like, what can I buy? Pick up Joey and be like, I'm too hungover for this. And it just goes in a drawer and you never play it again.
Pick up Joey. Joey goes, hey, put me down. sorry, Matt LeBlanc. Let's go back to 1996, where Friends is still very much in its pomp.
Yes.
We're not talking about Friends, of course. We're talking about the world of wrestling. Aww. This is where, if this is your first time here, what a few minutes you've had. Welcome aboard the roller coaster. No, never apologise. You must never apologise.
I'll have a heart attack on one of these ones, so keep watching. It'll probably happen.
That's it. I think
some point, you're going to watch Sam pop, and I'm just going to go, and Tom's not going to know what to do, whether it's an act or what.
I don't know, but I've got to finish. I'll get the podcast uploaded, then I'll help you. I've just priorities, in it.
I give him mouth to mouth, and then you start French kissing me.
This is how I did it with my dog. My mum told us we can't have a dog anymore.
Imagine just going to like a first aid class and they bring out the dummy that looks like, you know, like a robot. And they, you know, you could press it, it's just like right mouth to mouth. And then you just start full blown Frenching it in front of like 30 people.
That'd be very funny to do.
Would you get kicked out?
It depends how good the French is.
No, that's true.
Depends how good a kisser I am. Apparently I'm all right. according to my dog.
I thought your dog would say you're a bit rough. Fucking hell. That was low hanging. Nah, I'm sorry, everybody.
Now the dog left. Right, so if this is your first time here,
dog left.
Welcome in. What 6 minutes you've had. This is where Sam Driver and we roll back the years to 1996.
And
now.
talk about toys.
Yeah. We've just come off the Christmas episode.
We have, yeah. It's the 1st of January, so it's a New Year's special.
What a new year we are on the precipice of. This is a massive...
We got half a fucking year ago, yeah.
I know.
Half a year of shite. And then gold. Gold, gold, gold.
But it's gold buried deep in shite.
Yeah, it's like if you fed a cow a bag of gold nuggets and nothing but its usual diet and some hamburgers. Can't. No, yeah, we can give it a hamburger. Oh, no, we can't give it. We can't give it.
Morally wrong to give
no,
a
we can't
cow
give,
hamburger.
It would have to be an actual hamburger made of ham. It couldn't be...
Some wafer-thin ham.
Wafer-thin.
Yeah.
Well, how about we give the...
My dog is too.
We give the cow some form of food that's going to, I don't know, you know, be like greasy. Okay. Just give it like some... What's cow junk food?
Sausages.
Because cows eat grass. Like, how can we fry grass? Well, cows like fried grass. Maybe
isn't
we give
that,
it some fried...
Isn't that a really nasty dish involving a goose?
I can't even remember the original fucking point. I'm just on about frying grass for a cow.
Foie gras. It was to make gold nuggets.
Oh,
so
yeah,
I said,
okay. So we need to feed the cow loads of oily, delicious fried grass, then gold, then loads of normal grass, and then it'll just be like a mountain of shit and just gold buried deep in there. Hall's theme just gently playing if you put your ear up to it.
And it is our job, without gloves on, to sift through.
Gloves?
No gloves.
In this economy?
Put your socks on your hands like our dad did. When you kiss the dog. So we're back in 1999.
Why did that Tom, are you okay? Are you
being... I'm really tired.
Are you? Is this why you have a cat now? Are you not allowed dogs now?
This is the police said I couldn't have a dog no more.
Fuck's sake.
I've never kissed a dog, but we all have made mistakes in college.
It's like the fucking Kevin Owens story where he's playing with his figures. He throws the cup against the wall to make the Stone Cold Steve Austin smash. He puts a hole in the drywall and he's sat with Jimmy Jacobs talking about it. And he's like, so how old are you at the time? He's like, I was like 17. And then there's just like this moment of what the fuck. And
it's a man out of my own art is KO. So we're gonna. So we are back in 1996. I'm going to give you a little lay of the land,
yes,
of the real world, and then the wrestling world.
Well, I suppose, yeah. The start of a new year is a good,
yeah,
good place to kind of maybe reestablish the ground rules and remind ourselves what we're supposed to be doing.
It's a new year. Yes, it is. So we'll talk about the real world. We'll talk about the wrestling world in this particular week. It's a quiet week because it's New Year's Day.
Yeah.
It's not a whole lot. And there's a few little tidbits.
You've got your... it's a pretty predictable show with... If you looked at the roster, you'd be able to pick out who's going to be on it given the fact it's a New Year's special.
Everyone's probably quite hungover.
Yeah.
My mum and dad no doubt have sore heads from taking us to the Red Hill Club until midnight on New Year's Eve, until New Year's Day, where I drank Panda Pops until midnight.
My earlier memories of New Year's were we'd usually either go to or have a house party, but it's the first time I ever saw Rocky Horror was after midnight, and everybody else was just stood around the house drinking and chatting. But it was on TV, and I was just kind of sat there on the couch, and then the mouth appeared, and it was like, and it was like, holy shit. And it was sort of like, I'm far too young to understand any of this, but this is fucking amazing.
That's a really cool place to watch your first Rocky Horror movie.
Yeah, like turned all the way up while everybody's just like, rabble, 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 talking.
In the movies, in this particular week, in this particular year, number one in the US box office was 12 Monkeys still.
Oh, what fucking film.
It's a great
what
film, isn't it?
What fucking
film. Terry Gilliam masterpiece.
Brad Pitt's pre-marriage roles were often like really kind of twisted and fucking strange. And like, it all culminates with Tyler Durden, but like 12 Monkeys, he is golden in 12 Monkeys. It's such a good film.
It's a great film.
I can't believe they tried to turn it into a series. It's interesting enough that maybe you could, but it sort of defeats the whole point of that reveal in the film to have a whole series kind of explaining everything. But you know, it's still banging.
It's making money, isn't it? It's just they want to try and... I learned this week through that Hats Off Entertainment channel that I told you about a second ago. Did you know that there was an Uncle Buck sitcom?
No.
That didn't star John Candy.
Not surprising. John Candy's going to probably cost a lot of money.
But it was rubbish.
I mean, America tried to do Peep Show with Leonard from fucking Big Bang Theory.
They took...
So the whole concept of Peep Show, for anybody who's listening or watching who's never seen it, is it's two people who are like in their 30s or approaching, you know, their mid-30s. They live in a shitty flat in London and their lives are kind of going nowhere. And it's all kind of shot from the perspective of the people. So they walk around with first-person style cameras and you hear their inner thoughts. But I believe the way the Americans did it was that it was a sit-down studio fucking sitcom like Friends, and then it was probably an announcer over the top going, oh my God, he doesn't realize I went there, and blah, 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 blah. And it's like, fucking Peep Show's horrible and awful, and it's all about how shitty people are. It's what makes it so good.
I don't think they do a lot of that in that sort of comedies in America.
No.
The one thing I learned from watching documentaries about these sitcoms, and it's just a lot of the time it's serving different masters. You'll have somebody that'll come in with the idea, if I really want to run it this way, and then they'll go, well, no, actually, this is going to work. And then you end up making something that's neither one nor the other.
Yeah.
And everyone goes, well, this is shit. It's like, well, yeah, of course it's shit. So I imagine they went in with the Peep Show idea.
Yeah.
And then somebody went, oh, no, a studio audience sitcom will do better. Let's adapt it by having the voiceover. And then everybody went, this is shit. And all parties have gone, we know!
Isn't that the whole concept of like pitch week in the US where fucking networks go like, hey, here's 11 new fucking shows, watch the pilots.
But
they're already
sweeps,
they're already doing, like, you know, I think sometimes they're already recording the series though, and then it doesn't get picked up. It's like, what the fuck are you gonna do with 8 more episodes? Who's paying for that? And it gets quietly shuffled out onto a DVD and nobody buys it.
They, I mean, America does nice things, but the one thing they struggle with is adapting British sitcoms.
Yeah, I don't know.
Put that on record.
It's I don't know, like, America's comedy, like, well, you know, in fairness, it wasn't really a sitcom, but their adaptation of The Office.
Now, that's a great exception to the rule.
Because it did what a good sort of reimagining should do, in that it took the concept and made it uniquely its own after the first season. And it was like, okay, I can get behind that. So if they were to do something like that, all for that stuff, it's just when you take something and go, I like the core idea, but...
Yeah.
And then they change everything else, it's a bit, yeah. But I think there's a lot of countries guilty of that, really. But, you know, America seems to be number one. we're going to just take... Oh, it didn't work.
You see, right. For every office, there's a Red Dwarf US.
How about we do How I Met Your Father? Big hit.
Oh, I've not watched that yet. I'm scared to. I think it looks pap.
I'm really a big fan of How I Met Your Mother, so I'm not really probably going to watch it, but it's intriguing because it's the big sort of return of Hilary Duff to people's screens and stuff. So
and
they're
hearts.
Banking on like that being a big draw to it. So
Yeah. Well, I've not tried it yet. If you have, please let us know.
Yeah.
In the UK, number one movie is Seven.
What's in the fucking box?
Very awkward to talk about now, obviously, with Kevin Spacey, but yes. Possibly one of the greatest films, I'd say, out there.
Like, and the fact that Spacey wasn't in the credits.
David Fincher.
Like, there he is.
David Fincher, that film is like... So, like, around this time, this is the death of the MTV era. Mm. So it's quite interesting that the MTV bubble goes from, like, WrestleMania 1... at these huge soaring heights to just this lull, and the MTV generation comes to a standstill when Natural Born Killers drops. That's like the big farewell, the way that film's edited, and it's all very like in your face, instant, everything's just happening all the
time.
It's
the WrestleMania X7 of
yeah,
the MTV
that's
generation.
That's like the ultimate moment for the MTV generation. So this is as it's sort of dwindling and everything's getting a bit more jaded and music's getting a lot darker and the alternative scene's starting to bubble up, and you got bands like Nine Inch Nails and Marilyn Manson and all of these stranger things coming through that's then setting the playing field for the Attitude Era, basically, which is quite interesting. But it's strange that when you've got films like Seven and that, it's all kind of the culmination of that.
Yeah, there's a darkness to it. Not in the pop charts, though, because Mariah Carey's One Sweet Day is still...
For fuck's sake.
Fucking number
For
one!
For fuck's sake, Mariah. How many weeks do you need, Mariah?
Spoiler, we're looking at the summer by the time she's gone.
Are you fucking kidding me?
We're going to be touching the summer by the time she's away.
That's got to be some sort of record.
It's not even a record, but it's close.
Oh, my.
Michael Jackson's
Christ.
Earth Song is still number one in the UK.
Understandable, but yeah. Again, come on, Michael. How many more number ones do you need? I know it's a lot.
Big year in the world of the Flintstone Vitamin Company.
Right. Go on. I've always heard of them. I've never had them.
It was the year that Betty Rubble became a Flintstone Vitamin.
Woo!
So apparently they're to get kids
they're
to
chewable.
Take vitamins. They're chewy and they're great.
Yeah. What did we have? We had like spaghetti shapes of things like Transformers.
We did.
Like, we never really had any.
No, I'm sure we had like
we
multivitamins.
Multivitamins and stuff. I never remember having those as kid, but I remember like...
I remember chewy they'd multivitamins.
Be like, they'd be like Heinz Transformers, and it would just be like Autobot and Decepticons made of pasta. And it's just like...
it was like, we had Thomas the Tank Engine pasta in my house, and it was just like, that is shaped like Thomas. I was like, no, it's not. It's a series of squares. You can't fool me. That was the Fat Controller. That is also a series of squares. Like, just give me the alphabet ones. They're fine.
You ever have a Sonic the Hedgehog lolly?
Yes.
Terrifying.
You pop it out of the packet and melted.
Yeah, and the candy color has like faded, so it looks like he's crying blood.
What's the matter, honey? You've barely touched your Sonic the Hedgehog curry.
It's just a blue curry.
Yeah.
A Sonic tie-in curry that you can get at some sort of takeout place.
I love that now my brand now online is wrestling and Sonic the Hedgehog.
Yeah.
So I get sent that, I think, once every probably 4 weeks. Right. Somebody will go, so this thought of you.
Did you see the...
I want to get it one day and eat it and it'll make Alex sad.
I think it's the Chippendale Rescue Rangers. Have you seen the cameo that's in that?
Yes!
Yeah.
It's Weird Sonic!
Yeah, it's Ugly Sonic.
Ugly Sonic for the movies! The one when the first trailer dropped and we all went, what are you doing? The backlash to that was phenomenal.
Yeah, but necessary.
Necessary.
Part of me thinks
Absolutely
it was
necessary.
Part of me thinks it was a very, very clever marketing campaign.
Do you reckon? Do you reckon we were?
I am tinfoil as fuck. Everybody that listens to this has discovered that I am tinfoil as fuck. I'm not quite as tinfoily on camera usually, but I think that, say, like Uncharted, right? I couldn't give a shit about the Uncharted film.
Yeah.
The games for me are, you know, and I've not really played much of the Uncharted games, but the games were like, and that's probably why I didn't really give a shit about the film, but maybe it's a bad choice, but like Resident Evil, didn't really give a fuck about those films, but I went to see the first couple, all right. But, you know, movie versions of video games tend to be crap. Let's just level it. Like Assassin's Creed, wank. Like Mortal Kombat and that. On reflection, at the time, incredible. On reflection, wank.
Super Mario, okay, fair enough.
Blood Rain, like Alone in the Dark, anything Uwe Boll has gone fucking near. But, you know, you've got all these really bad tie-ins to the point where it's almost like a full-blown stigma that when you've got a film adaptation of a game that it's going to be a bit poo. But they drop that trailer with Ugly Sonic and nobody can shut the fuck up about it. The film is everywhere. The film's being promoted heavily. Everybody's poking fun at it, sure, but they're talking about it. And then they turn around and go, oh, we'll fix it. And they put Perfect Sonic in there. And it's like, ba-ba. And then it was like, we're going to delay it to get it redone. And then I think it was only like a 6 month wait. And it's like, you're not telling me that it was 6 fucking months to redo the entire thing. Surely to re-render that, that's going to be some power.
If they rushed. So you reckon that they would have already had it?
Because even if you had it all in place with, say, like all of the data there for the character to move around, part of me is just like, 6 months does not feel like...
It's still going to be a long time.
Yeah, like it feels like that's quite short to replace every shot and re-render every shot and put him into every shot again.
So maybe...
It's probably all bollocks and tinfoil, but that's where I am. I think that buzz and then them going, we'll listen to the fans, cemented that. And then everybody went, okay, we'll come see it.
Mm.
And then the sequels come out. Everybody loved it. And
sequel was great.
Like, we're getting 3, it looks like. And wow, it's,
The sequel, I think the sequel was superior to the first one. The first one, you know, again, it served a lot of masters because it was, you had to, you know, indoctrinate, you know, bring in a new Sonic audience.
Yeah.
You couldn't chuck all the stupid Sonic lore at it.
No.
So you had to do something that was a little bit softy. Come on in this way, this is fine.
The Sonic games kind of had to do that anyway, because back then it was all about the gameplay, less about the story. And so you were slowly introduced to the idea of the Emeralds. You knew you had to get them.
Yeah.
You didn't really know what they were for. But then as it thickens up, they obviously add in more and take away more lore. And it does get a bit ridiculous, but I think they've gone the right route with it.
I think they have. And the second one is brilliant. I went to go see it with Math. With Matthew Gregg, and we're just geeks for Sonic the Hedgehog. Yeah. We're just both all the while going, look, it's a little nod to a thing.
I think if we didn't have the wrestling here to talk about in front of us, I think we'd just sit and talk Sega all day.
Cause absolutely.
Both big Sega kids here.
We absolutely bloody were.
Yeah.
The 62nd Orange Bowl took place in this year, on this day. Number 6 Florida State beat number 8 Notre Dame in the Florida Bowl. This is why we have a special episode of Monday Night Raw that this episode of Nitro is up against, which is the Raw Bowl.
Okay.
Which we'll talk about as we get through the episode today. And January the 3rd, this particular week in the wrestling, the first ever clamshell flip mobile phone, the Motorola StarTAC, goes on sale. 60 million sold worldwide. Sound driver, did you have a clamshell phone?
Click. I had a Nokia flip phone. Mm. I had a Sony Ericsson flip phone. I never had a Motorola Razr.
Mm.
My phones went, hold on, it was a Motorola Brick. Then it was a Siemens A50, and then it was Siemens A50, Siemens A55, I think, which was like the updated version. And then it was like some Sony Ericsson thing, some other Motorola thing. And then it was like flip phone. And then I went for like Nokia N70, and that had like a slidey back. But it had like a really good camera, and it could run an emulator. So I'd be able to sit and play games on my phone, which was class. Only Game Boy games, but yeah.
Mm.
So like that was like the be all end all for me. And then I jumped into, how was your luck with touchscreen phones initially? Because mine was shit.
I had a touchscreen phone that had a little stylus with it, I seem to remember, and it was very clunky.
I had a, what the fuck was it? It was an HTC, but it was supposed to be amazing. It was terrible. It was terrible from day one. It could barely open any app. And then from there, I went into another touch phone, and it was shit. And then it was like a Sony Xperia X50 or whatever, a Z50. And it was like, this phone is amazing. It's Sony's new flag. It was shit. And then from there, went to China, did Xiaomi or however it's pronounced. Banging phone, but definitely was having all of my data collected, maybe, because I bought it from China and I had to have it unlocked and everything. And now I'm with Google, so I'm part of the hive mind now.
So either way, your data's been collected for yonks and yonks and yonks.
Exactly.
And yonks.
They can be evil now. They took the sign down.
Yeah, they're allowed to now. We are not evil. They've just taken the knot away. So share with us your first mobile phone. Drop us a tweet or the picture of your old mobile phone.
I like the pace of this podcast. We barely talk about wrestling.
This is how we roll.
We start off with just a load of preamble. And then you get about the 40-minute mark and it's like, right, okay, so this Nitro kicks off.
The record, I think, on the SmackDown podcast, I think we do 58 minutes before we start.
Oh, amazing.
That's the record.
We could beat that easily.
I think with a good wind,
yeah,
we could probably take that.
What did you think of the, just real quick before we move on too far, didn't Sega sell off, or like were looking to not sell off the rights to, but kind of make films of a few other classics around? Because I'm sure around the time Sonic was announced, they were going to do Golden Axe, or Golden Axe was on the table. And it's like, I don't know how the fuck a Golden Axe film works. You'd have to probably
not enough love for Golden Axe.
No,
still.
It would, like, I think, what? Like, it'd be like Conan the Barbarian, obviously, but like it'd be, I don't,
shit.
Yeah, like I don't get Streets of Rage. I think was another one which I can see kind of working if they went like Scott Pilgrim with it, and they made it super gay video gamey. I think Streets of Rage could work fucking cool.
Shinobi.
Shinobi would be incredible.
Shinobi would be good fun.
The film will have to be a slog. It'd have to be arduous to make it as hard to watch as the games are to play in places.
Oh God, yeah. Alex Kidd.
Alex Kidd in Shinobi World is my favorite Alex Kidd, but...
I do not think that was short. I remember it being like four worlds.
I remember it being brick as a kid. That's why I think I never really got beyond the first few levels. So it was like the Asterix games. They were amazing.
Oh,
but
my God,
there'd always be like the hitboxes on one particular Roman. You'd be like paffing him in the face and he just walks straight through the punches and just kills you. And it's like, is it...
This was the... Now, was it this Alex... Was this the Asterix game where you controlled Asterix and Obelix?
So you have Asterix. You have Asterix, which is just like solo the name. And I think there was a NES, SNES, Master System, and maybe a Mega Drive version of that, which, yeah, you could do each level as Asterix or Obelix.
And they're different powers.
And then, yeah. And so like Obelix could lift stuff up. Asterix could use potions, I think. But then... You did, I think there might have been another one, but there was also Asterix and the Great Rescue, which was the other one I had, which I loved. And that one, I think you still alternate on certain levels, but it's just really, really colorful, really, really like just proper 90s, early 90s, like 16, 8-bit dream.
I feel it. I seem to recall it being very aesthetically pleasing.
Oh, yeah. It's like kind of, you know, Sonic's bonus zones where it's all Technicolor and stuff. Yeah. It's got that kind of vibe to it.
I'm still thinking about a Golden Axe movie.
Yeah.
Tina Turner doing the soundtrack. Golden Axe.
Alien Storm. Alien Storm I could see working. Again, it would have to be done like a Streets of Rage type thing.
Mm. Decap Attack.
Decap Attack. Let's just do Excite Bike the movie.
Oh, my God. Yes.
Or Pong.
Blah, 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 blah. Excite Bike the movie would be
Excite
lovely.
Bike.
It's a great soundtrack. Mm. It could be like a real rags to riches story about a
cycle. Do you remember them?
Imagine a big orchestra doing that.
They might have already done that for Mario Kart 8 because there's an Excite Bike arena.
They may have done like a big orchestral version of the Excite Bike theme.
Yeah, there's like so many of those like weird franchises that I think would make interesting little. Just to see how weird or bad or funny they'd be.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
I like it a lot.
If Sega, though, if you could just make a fucking Yakuza anime, I think everybody would be happy. Because then you don't have to cast different actors, so people aren't going to complain, oh, it's not really Kiryu. You can have the guy that voices Kiryu do it, and you could do 20, 30 seasons of the bastard.
Do people really get upset about the fact that it's a different guy?
Well, I think it probably would, because Kiryu's got a very iconic voice. Like, I don't know if people would be that bothered, but... I think if they did an anime, they could be as ridiculous with it and as over the top with the action sequences. Because the amount of times in Yakuza, like, a helicopter just rocks up with a guy with a rocket launcher. And it's like, I think anime is the perfect route for it. And if they could just sell the fucking rights to it, Sega, and do it, it'd be amazing. You'd maybe even make enough money and make the Dreamcast 2.
Yeah, because let's play that game again.
Oh, come on. Do it.
Have we ever had a Shenmue movie?
We are getting a Shenmue animated series. I think it might already be out on Crunchyroll.
I hope that half the episode,
which is why I was hoping after that was announced, I was like, fucking Yakuza, make Yakuza!
Cowards. I hope half the episode is Ryo running back home before he gets told off.
I just hope they use the original audio, so he's just like, it's all cast except for Ryo. And he's just like, where were you on that day?
And it's the snow exact turns same rain.
Every time it's like, oh, hey, Rio, how's it going? You want some noodles? And he's like, where were you on that day?
Perhaps they're out.
The fucking, when you go into his house and instead of going up the stairs, it's like, yeah, he's got to take his shoes off, but the game can't animate him taking his shoes off. So you step into the house, there's a loading screen, fade to black. Then you step 2 feet forward, there's a loading screen, turn to black, and then Rio's on his feet.
The commitment to taking the shoes off. The commitment to taking the shoes off.
It's important. It's an important part of the culture. And that was the whole speed of that game was, you know, designed to be something very different, which I liked.
I felt like Shenmue felt very special on the Dreamcast.
Oh, God, yeah. It was all people talked about in the fucking schoolyard for months.
Because it was like your first dabble in sort of like 3D sandbox gaming.
Yeah.
Like I could just wander around and do whatever.
Yeah, you put change into like a little machine and get a little toy. You can go play Outrun on like an arcade machine.
You can drink a fuckload of Coke.
It's the proto Yakuza. And without games like Shenmue, you wouldn't have Yakuza. And that's why I want more games of that style. Because when you get bored of the game, you just stay in the game and do other stuff. So I like that.
Many years ago, I was Chinese.
Where were you on that day? Do you know why it has such bad voice acting?
Please tell me.
So the Japanese port of the game was on time. The American port of the game was not. So the Western port was not looking good. They needed to still get a cast and everything in order. And apparently they had ideas to bring in actual name actors because right. I think that's what they did over there. Or at least they were planning on, you know, drawing more eyes to it. Dreamcast, big deal. And, you know, PlayStation 2. So we need to hurry the fuck up and get this out. So I remember reading, they just put out a general casting call to anybody that could speak English. Mm. And so you end up with this mishmash cast of people who haven't really maybe done this stuff before, have only done smaller projects. And it's just wonderfully bad. Like, everything about that game is wonderfully bad. Like, some of the voices, man, not even in terms of, like wonderfully bad. I mean, like, the voice performances, because the game itself is amazing. But, yeah, it's just, delicious.
It's a deep, deep joy.
Delicious.
Talking of acting.
Yes.
This week in the WWF,
right,
they've started running a series of skits taking shots at World Championship Wrestling.
Is this Billionaire Ted's Wrestling War Room?
It is the beginning of Billionaire Ted's Wrestling War Room. This is the last part of the week's episode of Raw that we have.
Yeah.
Is Billionaire Ted at the top of a boardroom
yes.
table, and you have numerous nameless people, including a young Vince Russo playing his first TV role.
Oh yeah.
You had the Huckster, which is an old man dressed as Hulk Hogan. You had the Nacho Man, old man dressed as Nacho Man Randy Savage, and you had Scheme Gene, who was an old man dressed as Mean Gene Oakland. And it was them all getting together to try and come up with some original ideas to beat the World Wrestling Federation.
This is it all starts off very innocently, and it's very kind of tongue in cheek, and it's a bit like, well, WCW's unoriginal, look at them stealing our old guys, we don't need them, we've got all this young blood and WWF. And then it slowly turns into Vince's personal vendetta against Ted Turner, and Vince trying to take out full page ads in financial publications to warn stockholders of Turner Networks that Ted's using their money to finance his little wrestling corporation without them knowing. And it turns into this very nasty little back and forth that I think the WWF, not realizing that the parent company of their network also is part of Turner, or he requires Turner to operate. That channel requires Turner to operate or something. Vince is forced to take it off the air eventually.
But we kind of not until it reaches its full conclusion.
Yeah,
WrestleMania
so
12.
It goes on for quite some time, and it's fun to go back and look at because it's Vince just being really petty, being really really petty. And it's the type of thing where, you know, like the Medusa dumping the title or turning up with the belt on another channel, and it's like, oh my God. And it's like, you did the same fucking thing with Flair and the Big Gold. Like, come on.
Yeah, what? Yeah,
you're just angry because it's not you doing it this time.
It is. Yeah, it's funny how Vince McMahon will both become a beast controlling the business,
yeah,
and a scared little mouse depending on who's coming at him.
Yeah, hiding behind like some sort of authority, going, "He did it."
He is like Boo from Super Mario.
Yeah,
when like if someone's coming at him, he's like, "No, we're just a small mom."
Second they turn their back,
I am Titan Industries. Tell you who loves the billionaire Ted skits.
Well, Ted did initially.
Ted loves him at this point. He's like, this is good fun. I got a bit of fun and wrestling. His legal team didn't, but no, Ted loved them.
Ted loved them, yeah. And there comes a point where there's essentially the trajectory of the billionaire Ted skit. Sorry, this is going to spoil it for you. Starts off in the boardroom and it ends in front of, I think it's like a deposition, but Ted does like some press conferences, like there's all these things done for the billionaire Ted character, but ultimately it ends up with him being publicly questioned about, you know, the stock and everything, and I think he has to go in front of the FTC and all this stuff, and it reaches a point where it kind of stopped being funny for him. I think I remember reading around the time where he brings up lithium, because Ted Turner had bipolar disorder and would have to take lithium to control that, and so Vince then throws that into one of them, and that's where it's all right, gloves are off. But ultimately Bischoff sums it up perfectly. You know, it's like they had nothing fucking left. They've got nothing left to throw at us, so all they're going to do is try and poke fun and try and derail.
Dave Meltzer in The Observer this week writes, the one thing that should comfort everyone that doesn't like all this name-calling is that they should realise that if Hogan and Savage or Savage were to call Vince tomorrow, they'd be on top in the WWF the next day. And if someday, if WWF survives, Hogan and Savage will be back there and they'll all be best friends again. Now, He's not entirely wrong with half of that.
Hogan ends up back there and holds a title again.
Hogan becomes champ again.
And Mr. America.
7, 8, 9, 10, 11. No, Mr. America was going to be different. 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. 12, and within 8 years, Hogan's back there. So Dave wasn't completely wrong.
Yeah.
The only other little bit of news, Bash at the Beach in July looks to tentatively be moved from Huntington Beach to Lake Tahoe and possibly, according to Dave Meltzer, being renamed Quake at the Lake.
Oh, fucking hell.
Now, that doesn't happen because we get a very monumental episode of Quake at the Lake.
Yes, it's a very big Quake at the Lake. But if you had Quake at the Lake and did not have fucking... You can't even do it because he's the shark. Oh, my God.
Shark in the park.
You couldn't even do Earthquake in the Main. You couldn't even do Earthquake in the Main. You could, but it wouldn't be Earthquake.
We'd Quake him in the Third Man.
If only... Well, he is the shark. Maybe they put one of those fake shark fins on his back and make Tenta swim in. I'd pay for that. I'd pay to see Tenta trying to snake his way in under the water, making the fin do this. And then eventually gets in the crowd's like... And out he jumps.
It's Tenta-san. Get
in.
And
then somehow underneath him is Sullivan. He's concealed him the entire time. And Sullivan's just like...
It is the fallout from Starrcade 1995.
Yeah.
Which we had last Tuesday.
Flair is now champion.
Flair is now top of the tree once again.
Yeah.
As we come live, we're pre-taped, from the Omni. We're pre-taped. Omni is proper holy ground for NWA and WCW. The show actually starts, and I think this is why I think this is live. We start with Dave Penta counting the crowd down. Like to go, okay, we're going live in 10, 9, 8. And as he's saying that, we're getting the shot of the skyline of Atlanta, GA. Yeah. And we've got Bischoff going, welcome to Monday Nitro. Da, da, da. But you can hear Penza counting down the crowd to make sure they make a lot of noise.
There's one moment in particular that's similar to this later on that I'll have to mention. But just real quick, the Omni in Atlanta, I was reading recently, was built. It's a fascinating looking building. It's not there anymore. There's a new arena on its, a stadium on its grounds or whatever. But it was built to be rust proof, and it's very unique when you look at it. It's a bit like an eyesore, but in a stunning way. Like, it's like, Christ, that's a weirdly beautiful building, even though it's ugly as fuck. But it was designed to be rust proof, and everything was supposed to kind of rust over. No, that was it, not like rust proof, but it was going to rust over to a point where it would harden.
Right.
And it would form like a seal around itself so that any more rust wouldn't do any damage. Apparently what happened...
So not completely rust-proof then?
So it would essentially be rusty as fuck, but that would protect it against any rust damage. Mm. But instead the rust just ate away at it and there were just massive holes in it to the point where people could apparently get into the arena.
No
so they had to start guarding like sections of it that were rotting away. And then eventually, because it was supposed to last like 50 years or something, and they only got like 25 years, they tore it down, put a new stadium on.
Fucking imagine somebody's job every night to guard the rusty pocket.
Rusty pocket.
Who I believe was a blues singer in the 50s.
Yeah, or... or a worker, like a job guy in like, what, 90s, 70s?
I'd love it if somebody worked as a jobber under the name Rusty Pockets.
We got young Rusty Pockets here from Lexington Beach.
God love him. Bischoff, Bobby and Mongo announced that Ric Flair is the new WCW champion. He puts it on the line against Hulk Hogan in our main event.
But
holy
which,
shit.
But which Hulk Hogan's going to turn up, Tom? Because you had Hulk Hogan before the suspension and then Hulk Hogan after the suspension. And he's so different. He didn't fucking change once. He just came out.
He changed his trousers.
Did the usual shit. He did, like, yeah, he used a chair once or twice. He didn't change that much. And they're like, oh, but which Hogan's it going to be? He's not the same anymore. As if it's not going to be red and yellow, all-America Hulk Hogan. Making his glorious return after a suspension that didn't really mean anything.
Heenan says that Randy Savage is blaming Arn Anderson for the title change.
Yes.
So, fuck you, Savage. You're out the title picture, mate. No, correct me if I'm wrong, because it's been a couple of weeks since we watched Starrcade.
Yes.
Was it Arn's fault? Really?
I can't remember.
I can't.
I'll pull up the article.
I don't recall. Like, I mean, obviously, the Horsemen were involved. I wouldn't put the onus completely on
Starrcade
on Arnie, baby.
Right, hold on.
But this is what's leading to that match tonight. We're going to get Arn Anderson versus Macho Man in a moment. Plus, Luger and Sting are teaming up later on tonight as well, continuing the peculiar nuance.
It just says Flair defeated Savage for the championship.
Right. I know Arn was amongst it. We watched
Arn
it.
Arn wouldn't
we
do that. He's a good boy.
He's a good boy, is the Arn.
We talked
Anderson.
Over it, really.
We did.
We ranted over it.
We talked through it.
Yeah. Some beers, though.
So, yeah, some lovely beers.
Yeah.
So our opening match tonight is Arn Anderson versus Macho Man Randy Savage. We see Savage charge the ring, getting jumped as he gets into the ring as well. So well done, Sav. Great start to your not being a champion run. They brawl out the ring, Savage getting Savage on Arn. At this point, Eric Bischoff decides, you know what? People might change the channel now. Let's stop that shit from happening. As he talks about what's happening on Monday Night Raw, which is the Raw Bowl. Are you familiar with the Raw Bowl, Sam Driver?
No, I'm not.
The Raw Bowl is a four corners tag team match.
All right, so it already is off to a great fucking start.
But it's designed like a football, like the aesthetic.
Oh, I remember this.
So it had like a green pitch style canvas cover.
Yeah.
You were allowed a timeout. It was elimination rules.
The
ref was dressed like an NFL ref. You know what? They really leaned in to the aesthetic.
This is it. You can't blame them for trying.
Doing and
the
thing different.
It was the 90s. Everything had to have a gimmick. Everything had to be hokey and bright and new and in your face and fresh and different. And so you can't blame them for trying. It's a really good idea to capitalize on it.
Mm.
But ultimately, it's just a bit naff, isn't it?
It's a bit naff. Yeah. Bischoff agrees, who reveals to the crowd, people watching at home, that the Smoking Guns win the Raw Toilet Bowl. There you go. You don't need to change the channel. You naughty boy, Bischoff, giving away the result of a pre-taped Raw. They'll mention it a couple of other times that night as well, as Mongo refers to the WWF as the Kitty Cat League.
Whereas WCW is the Chihuahua League.
So yeah, mate, you've got a tiny dog.
Yeah, I think a cat could take a Chihuahua.
Pipe down. But seriously, all the best in real life, Mongo. Mongo goes on to say, with the match in progress, there's always horsemen lurking around. Maybe one day I might do something about it. Yeah, mate, you fucking join them.
Yeah.
See you, Mongo. Yeah.
He didn't know that at the time.
Maybe
right.
One day I'll do something about
he's
it.
He's all right.
Yeah, add to that
the thing with this match, it started with such pinball pace.
Mm.
Like Savage gets jumped, Arn gets thrown to the outside. Savage is launching his entrance jacket off him from the ring. Crowd's really hot for it. And then it just becomes like Rest Hold the Musical. Like I love there's a guy in a Johnny B. Badge shirt going ape shit at Arn. When Arn gets thrown at the floor, he's just like, yeah, come on. Like banging the thing and everything. And then it goes from that to just like, oh, no, I'm going to lock you up.
Just have a little
and then
sit
they just kind of sit
bit.
On each other for a bit.
Yeah, and that's pretty much what happens. Arn working over Savage's permanently injured arm in
nails
the process.
It off the ring post and everything.
Hammerlock body slam at one point, which I quite liked, where he hooks his arm behind him and then slams him.
Did you
nice little touch.
Also see that we have Hogan in attendance again tonight in the crowd, but this yes. week he was joined by his friend Guitar Superman. The Christmas bee is notable by his absence, but he may just be keeping kayfabe alive, brother, brother.
Do we think the Guitar Superman maybe has a double life as the Christmas bee?
Don't you ever suggest that. The Christmas bee is real, Tom. We've talked about it. The Christmas bee does not have a very happy end, hence why he's not here this week.
I forgot. I forgot all the lore we
keeping
did on the Christmas bee.
Keeping kayfabe alive, Tom.
We need a series of T-shirts of the classic review. And I think for the SmackDown one, it would be Kane in a sitcom. For the Raw one, the current running shtick is Inoki is just an angry Scouse.
Yes.
Scouse Inoki. and I think for this, we need a T-shirt or maybe a Christmas jumper with the Christmas bee on. All hail fucking the really hell. Sad Christmas bee yeah. that died
you
alone.
Should have the story of the Christmas bee as you get further
knitted,
down.
Knitted.
He's just under a cup at the end, staring at the roaring fire.
Gosh, it's made me sad again. So anyway, Anderson is peeling away the tape on Savage's arm, digs deeper into an arm ringer, rear arm bars, rest hold the musical, as Sam says. Arm cuts off a Savage comeback with a 1-1-1-1-1 fucking chef's kiss of a snap DDT. God, Arn is so fucking crisp.
Anything with explosive movement yeah. and Arn Anderson is just like, wah-bah.
I see Brock Anderson
I want to see Arn hit a
do
dragon suplex, though. Could you Whoa. Imagine Arn? The snap on that would... You wouldn't be able to keep hold. That person Christ. Would be in row Z. It'd just be like, what that?
What have we done? You see Brock trying to do a bit of the yeah. sort of snappy Arn, and he will get it. But he's not quite
it's,
as.
I think it's
at the
moment. It's one of the finest qualities of. And Arn's not even a big guy wrestler. Like he's a big guy, but he's not like a Bam Bam or like a Vader. But it's one of those qualities where, in like a Bam Bam or a Vader, where you know you kind of have the general pace of the match, and you kind of get into it, and then it just ramps up and ramps up and ramps up in key moments, and it's like, holy fuck, this guy can go. The explosiveness is like just.
He's an explosive boy. The ref gets knocked down. Anderson goes for the brass knucks concealed in his undercrackers.
Yeah.
However, Savage knocks him down, grabs the knucks, and clatters Arn with them instead. And he gets a very sudden three count to win the match. Benoit and Pillman, fellow horsemen, charge out to the ring and cry foul about the brass knucks
yes.
being used.
Yeah. And then there's a little bit of fallout afterwards, which we'll get to. But, oh, no, is there? No, I think
no, there's a bit coming up after the next match.
But yeah, the one thing here. Did you see that Randy just checks on Arn's cock, make sure it's all right after the finish?
He has a little look at his yeah. junk. And
some would say it's to throw the nooks back in there, but it's just a little bit of a quick, oh, yeah, it's safe.
Yep, you've definitely
got to... make sure. You've got to protect the meat.
Protect the pecker.
Yeah.
Hashtag protect the pecker. He's very kindly protecting
it
Arn's
was No,
pecker.
But like smart of him to pull the trunks up, throw the weapon back in.
Yeah, I like that.
I like that. Concealed it again. It was good. Used their own tactics against them.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Did you know cats tend to hide symptoms of sickness and pain? I learned this the hard way after losing my cat, Gingy. So I created Pretty Litter, a health monitoring litter that helps detect early signs of illness by changing colors, saving you money and potentially your cat's life. Pretty Litter is veterinarian developed, and it's the easiest way to keep tabs on your fur baby's health right at home.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Bad bad night to start with for the Horsemen. Let's see if we can improve it as we move into our second match of the night. It's Chris Benoit versus Steven Regal.
And Chrissy B is now in the horsey C.
He is in the horsey C.
I don't know why it's horsey C. Horsey M wouldn't rhyme with Chrissy B.
Horsey me. No. But Benoit Regal.
Yeah, it should be an excellent showcase of classic British catch as can can wrestling.
There ain't going to be a Commonwealth after this match is over.
Catch as can can was
a dance that they did during the Follies,
just during the round breaks.
Who's this at ringside? Loving life. It's Hammerin' Hank Aaron.
Oh, he's having a great time. Look at him giggle at the fake sports stars. Everybody,
do you know much about Hammerin' Hank? I can give you some details.
I know that he's a big fucking deal. I know that he's a very good athlete.
A legendary field player, regarded as one of the greatest of all time. 755 career home runs, breaking Babe Ruth's record.
Yeah,
there's a documentary of his life story that appeared last year in our timeline in 1995, shortlisted for best feature-length documentary in the 96 Oscars.
Awesome.
Throughout his life, Hank Aaron did the impossible and then encouraged others to do it too. The details of his exploits in baseball only tell half the story of a very remarkable life.
Like, over here, we don't really hear much about American athletes unless they like track and field around the time of Olympics and big
meets. Or murder someone.
If something bad happens. But when it's somebody like legendary, like, most people here won't know why they know the name, but it'll be like, oh, Hank Aaron, like, because he's mentioned in so many shows or whatever. But like, yeah, it's a name I recognize, knew was a big deal, but interesting that he's here in general, like, because it's one thing WCW could do quite a lot more, I think, was initially anyway, until WWE starts throwing the money around. And WWE had obviously done so themselves with LT and everything, but WCW was able to just randomly just have these people at random events, and it wasn't like they were announced as they're going to be there or anything. It was just like, hey, look who's in the audience watching this.
Yeah.
This person's cool as fuck. They're watching it, you're cool as fuck. And just by that association, it's just like, hey, these people are interested in our product.
Cool by association, isn't
it?
Yeah, that's it. Look at them endorsing us. We have ourselves a Regal-Benoit match in 1996. Tie-up ends with Regal headbutting Benoit. Benoit gets mad at this and ends up battering him for hitting him in the head. This is a rough and snug affair. Benoit breaking close quarters between the two with a German suplex.
And this is it. I was ready for some rolling around. I was ready for some holds. And it's just a fucking knockdown fight.
They both chose murder today.
Batting the shit out of each other. The crowd, though, just cheering for the Horsemen over their former colonizers. It's bullshit.
Absolutely.
I don't get it at all. You know?
Disrespectful.
Without us, there'd probably be no tea in America or something.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You'll be back. Soon you'll see.
That you
you'll
could have thrown
you belong to me.
They threw it in the harbor, didn't they? I don't know much about American history. We did the American West. I fucking loved that in history.
And then he sang a song about it in Hamilton.
No. Not seeing Hamilton.
You say and sign them. The price of my love wasn't price that you're willing to pay. You cry in tea that you throw in the sea when you see me go by. Why so sad? Remember we made an arrangement for you went away.
Keep going. We need the EGOT. We need the EGOT.
Mad. Remember, despite our estrangement, I'm your man. You'll be back. Soon you'll see. You'll remember you belong to me. You'll be back. Time will tell. Just remember that I served you well. Oceans rise, empires fall. Just one reason to fall through it all. And when push comes to shove, I will kill your friends and family to remind you of my love. Da 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 da.
All I'm saying, right, is that if we don't win a fucking Tony after that,
fucking
I reckon we can get the others. We can get the Oscar and the Grammy and all that
I'll
shit
take
pretty
the Tony.
Easy. Well, if you get the Tony, you'll release it on CD and get the Grammy anyway, so that's
grabbing
fine. It's taken
Tony.
Care of. But Oscar and Emmy, is it? Yeah, we got to get an Oscar and an Emmy. So this is video
two,
stuff. Let's
the
just submit
dogs that.
That
left.
We can put this in for the Oscars, right?
I reckon.
It needs a cinema release.
Yes.
Oh, no, I think it needs premiere. It needs like to premiere within a certain window. We'll have to record a special and we'll submit it for the Academy.
Oh, if only there was somewhere.
Let's actually try.
If only there was somewhere. That you and I were going later this year, where we could probably get a crowd to do this live. This could be us. But you refuse to play.
We'd need to find a venue. There'd need
I
to be all sorts of fucking
venue.
Shit.
There'd be loads of wrestling fans there.
We'll see. We'll see.
That, like.
We'll see.
Sort of it, yeah.
There's a lot. I don't even know what the schedule's going to be like.
What's the schedule going to be doing this?
We'll sort it out.
We'll sort it,
we'll
like.
Sort it out.
If we got everyone. We'll sort it out.
We'll sort it out.
Auntie Angela.
You know, the fucking Ivan Dobsky. I'm Ivan Dobsky, the mid-sif murderer. Oh, no, I never did it. Hello, please. Can I get the best of Smokey on LP?
Hello, Mr. Hoppy!
Mr. Hoppy!
what a journey you've been on today. Benoit misses a diving headbutt. I think I did as well. Successfully counters a tombstone with another tombstone! Mm. Right, he then misses a plancher over the top rope.
Yeah.
Regal rolls him in, Regal pins him, and Regal wins.
After a beautiful butterfly suplex at some point before
there was a
the
beauty
ring.
Of a butterfly
like,
suplex
picture perfect from
yes.
Regal, but yeah,
was
odd one,
that
odd one,
bullshit.
But I don't know. But it leads to the little confrontation we're gonna have.
It does lead to a conflab with the horseman because Gino.
But really, it's not even Benoit getting the shit in that one, so it is a bit confusing.
I just thought, okay, if it's gonna lead to what's gonna lead to next, fine. If the horseman need to lose to get from A to B, fine. But is that the best way we do it?
Well, my note says, way, your Piley D don't mean shit. Britain, get in. So.
It does say that. It does say that. You've even written in your notes, Chrissy B in the horsey seat.
Yeah. You got to just make notes of stuff. I just
I like
stream
your
of consciousness
notes.
As I watch. Yeah.
I like your
line
notes.
By line.
It's amazing scenes.
Yeah.
So it was a weird finish. If you want to do the whole thing, I'd say we'll get to the next segment.
Let's go through the next segment and we'll talk about
right.
it.
Right. Yeah. Gene Okerlund is in the ring with the horsemen who are all a bit cross.
And basically coins the bubbly meme.
He bloody
like
does.
22 years early. He almost says a little bit of the bubbly. Almost.
He asks whether the horseman had too much of the bubbly.
Yeah, but the way he says it is like Christmas. Too much of the bubbly.
And it's the like, bubbly. We're nearly there. We're nearly there.
Do you remember when that was a meme?
Oh.
Do you remember when the world was that bright and fun? And I was sat doing Who's That Pokemon? It's a little bit of the bubbly. Oh, those were good times.
That's a dream.
Those were good times.
Pillman chews out Arn and Chris for their losses. Arn turns it on to Pillman, talking about his erratic behavior towards Sullivan.
Yeah. Arn's just like, look, why the fuck are you even doing this shit with a horseman? Like, we'll do what we want to do.
Mm.
We'll fight who we want to fight. There's no point in bringing your like trouble to us, and there's no point in actively going out and poking people. It's not what we do. It might be what you do, but it's not what the horsemen do. And he's kind of chastising him. And he even says to him, I'm not used to talking to the back of people's heads, to get him to like turn around and look at him as he's talking to him. So Arn's very much the dad here, just being like, stop giving your little brother shit.
Mm.
And
he's like the new politician in the party, whereby the old guard are going, this is how we've always done it. This is our tradition. This is how we always do it. And he's like, no, I've got fucking new ideas. How about we just go and look for trouble? And they're like, no, trouble finds us.
How about in a year's time, it'll be like, if you just took Tony Blair and applied it to Pillman, it'd be like, how about we reform all the social stuff and then war crimes? War crimes, war crimes, war crimes.
That's exactly what happened here. War crimes.
That's only Regal's on the outside like, I've got an idea.
Quick, go get me a development territory. So Arn has turned this on to Pillman and is saying, look, you know, you're going out seeking trouble and you got to wind it in with Sullivan and the Dungeon of Doom. Mm-hmm. This brings out the Dungeon of Doom. And in just true weird WWE style, I'm like, ah? So Sullivan,
yep,
Zodiac,
yep,
and Jimmy Hart all coming yep. out to attack the horseman. But then yep. the giant turns up.
Yeah.
And drags the Dungeon of Doom away.
Yep. So my notes, it just reads, hold on. Pillman chews out Benny balls. Benny says he's been pulling his weight. Pillman threatens to take away the naked ladies. No, really, he actually does. Arn tells Pillman to stop being a mark and stop biting off more than he can chew. He doesn't call them a mark, but you know what I mean. And then I just wrote, out comes Sully and the gaggle of shite. And we move on to the next segment. Because literally nothing happens.
Yeah.
They come out, I get, you know, the visual of having them come out and face off or whatever. But they still kind of do that today, but you wouldn't have somebody come and pull them back.
And you'd giant see them, of all
like,
people.
Get maybe all the way out of the ring, or they'd start like bickering and they'd stand in a certain spot near the ring. And then you'd go to the ad break, come back, and you're into another match. Or you'd go back to commentary for something. But to have Giant then come out and be the one to be like, no, guys, come on. Come on, guys. Stop it, guys.
I'm
come
on, the level-headed
Brutus.
One.
Get in the back. Go on. What are you doing?
Weird
Jimmy,
choice.
Get over my shoulder. Come on. Like, it's strange, yeah.
Because like, Giant shouldn't be the level-headed one. He was out there twatting people with chairs.
Yeah, but you'd surely have Giant come out with them, maybe, and have them just maybe get to a point where they're doing this.
Yeah.
And maybe have Giant hold a couple of them back, like, we don't want this right now. Or Sullivan, which would make the most sense as he's leading the fucking group, be like, no. Like, not right now. But instead, Sullivan's the one, I'm going to get you. And it's Giant going, come on, man. You don't need it.
Brian Pillman, this week, according to The Observer, guest hosted a talk show on WLW
yes.
in Georgia.
Okay.
A station out of Cincinnati.
I said yes, as if I knew what the fuck it was.
But he was working his heel character that the whole thing, talking about how great the horses were, how they're going to kick over his ass. Everybody who called in wanted, according to Dave, almost everyone who called in wanted to kill Hogan. So, like, Hulk Hogan's getting a load of grief on this radio show.
Well,
people don't like him.
Things are starting to change for the Hulkster. And as I said, this is the end of the MTV generation. So how fitting that the man whose career was launched by MTV is about to kind of almost die with it if something doesn't change. And so this is, as we start to progress through the year, it's going to be, hey, maybe what if we just did a group like this? Hey, what if we got Hogan to run it? No, he won't do it because of merch. Wait, Hogan, nobody really gives a fuck about you anyway. My management says it's a bar. Just shut up and do it. Oh, I'm making more money than ever before. Wow.
Thanks to me. Big thanks to me, Hulk Hogan, who got that right. Tag team action up next. It is Sting and Lex Luger.
Let me do this. Super Ass, brackets, Powers of Pain, and the Colonel versus Stanger. I thought Stanger was nice because it's like Sting and Luger mixed together.
Stanger. I like it.
Why didn't they give him that name?
Sticks.
Get on the phone to Eric Bischoff right now and ask him. Eric, why the fuck didn't you call him Stanger and then just hang up?
He removed me from... He removed me off Bebo.
I think he blocked me for a while. I don't know. There's so many... When people tag you and something, go, hey, this is funny. And you're like, no, it's not. Don't tag me. I'm blocked.
I'm blocked. And you nailed it there. The Super Assassins are indeed the Warlord and the Barbarian.
But I like to call him Super Ass.
I like Super Ass too. This is one of just five matches they'll have in WCW.
Yeah, and they're with WCW for a year, I think, or just about a year. From 95 through to 96, they had a few appearances. I kind of get why it doesn't work, because even for 95, 96, it's a bit too comic booky. Like, the guys look menacing enough on their own. I think you could have taken the masks off them, because they look a bit like gimps. They look a bit like... Imagine like a really shit cosplay version of Juggernaut from X-Men. They kind of look like that. If the guy had the build, like the guy was built but had like a really cheap outfit, that's what they look like. Even for the time, it's a little bit like, eh.
Yeah, you're right. It's far
too... Are those masks stitched in? Like, what's going on?
But you're right. They couldn't have been Warlord and Barbarian. It's far too old, cheesy 80s and comedic. In the company that has a man called Zodiac.
I know. But this is part of the problem.
And
this
a shark!
This is why the tide's going to turn. This is why the tide's going to turn. But it's even by those standards, it's a bit like...
It's too much. Because
they're out there with the Colonel. Why? Like, they're out there and it'll be the Colonel introduce them as his, like, super assassins. But it's like, yeah, but... Why? It's the Colonel. Surely he'd have like a cowboy tag team or some shit.
He
like,
did.
Look at him.
He had, like, he had dirty dicks.
Yeah, it's like, great look there. But the
Super ass and dirty dick.
Super ass and dirty dick.
In the books of the books of Colonel.
Oh, if
Robert
they tagged Parker. Him up, they could be super ass dick. I need John, mock that up, please. We need a super ass dick t-shirt ready to go.
Tag the Undertaker in it without any reference or context.
I don't want to get blocked by any more people.
Tag Eric Bischoff in it. And
it's
Sam.
Always the most annoying when you log in. It's like, oh, not seen from this. Oh, blocked. It's like, why have I didn't say anything bad about you?
I had amazing back and forth a few weeks ago with somebody who I'd blocked, found out they were blocked by me. Just a nasty piece of work is always talking shy. I don't think he'd say anything to me, but I remember just going, oh, I'll block him.
Yeah.
And a friend of theirs had DM'd me saying, why have you blocked my mate?
Oh, yeah, you get those.
So I saw the thing and they screenshot that Tom Campbell has blocked you. And they said, like, Tom Campbell is a soy boy cuck. I was like, oh. And then, so I thought, all right, I'm down for this today. I'm down for this today. So I unblocked him. And then I tagged his mate in it who DM'd me. Yeah. And I went, cheers for letting me know about this in DMs. Appreciate it. Not quite sure why I blocked you. Probably disagreed with something that you'd said that didn't sit well with me. And having seen the reaction to you blocking me, I was probably right. Oh, well, all the best. This person has blocked you. He blocked me immediately back. I had to really bite my tongue not to put... So-and-so is a soy boy cuck.
Like, I'm at the point where if it's not in front of me and it's not tangible, then it's like, if I've got to block somebody, I block them. Fuck it. Like, it's like social media has drained my mental state. And, like, just, you know, being, like, on social media so much for work, it just drains me. So it's just like, now I kind of use it as and when.
Yeah.
Now I kind of just post whatever. And if people are going to give me shit, then I'll fucking block you. Like, what does it matter? Yeah. It doesn't matter. I don't exactly have hot takes. So it's like...
Mate, you booked Goldberg versus Roman Reigns.
Exactly. That's why a lot of the... A lot of the community doesn't want anything to do with me anymore because of my expert level booking. Whatever, guys, it was a great match. That's all I'm saying.
We see on here as this match is getting underway the very literal sense of a slide into the DMs.
I thought you were going to say a slide into Super Asti.
Oh my God, that's a very different show. Oh. Craig Pittman's back.
That's some hotel only pay channel wrestling, is that?
That is the young and the boneless.
Oh yeah, God, Craig Pittman. So the match starts off actually with Pittman's quite an exciting trade, doesn't it? I think it starts off with a bit of back and forth. Obviously, you've got like three power guys in there in Super Ass and Luger, and Sting's obviously a big guy as well, but not quite as stacked. But Sting's kind of bringing the energy to it. They're bringing the big. So, like, you've got the start, and I think somebody's thrown to the outside. There's a dive to the outside. But you don't catch any of that shit because Craig Pittman turns up. And before he even says anything, and you'd think coming in, you'd be like, hey, I'm just going to walk straight to the person I need to talk to and do this. He kind of comes in as if he's walked into the manager's office. The manager's still on the phone. And he's the manager's just gone like, 2 minutes, mate. And it just, you know... Still on the line. Pittman's just behind, like... it felt like an eternity before he then goes to Mongo. Fuck me. Mongo's response is golden, because it's almost like, as per my last email,
it is
levels of fucking response.
It is so, as per
and
my
Bischoff,
last email.
And Bischoff's like, I don't know why this is happening. Like, oh, you know, it's almost like Bischoff's like, hurry the fuck up, man.
So Pittman wants to talk to Mongo, because he says, Mongo, as a five-time amateur, and he needs guidance from the pros.
Just for anybody who's missed a couple of episodes, Pittman has gone to Jimmy Hart. Pittman has gone to Bobby Heenan. Pittman has gone to a few people looking for a manager. He's down on his luck right now, and he needs something to kind of freshen him up in the WCW, as so many of them call it. Mm-hmm. So he thinks a manager is what he needs, and I quite agree. Like, it'd be nice to see Pittman with a manager, a good mouthpiece, but nobody really wants to manage him. Nobody really wants to manage him.
I feel
and it's,
really
it's kind
sad.
Of shit that he's in a storyline like this, because it's just humiliating, isn't it?
It's
I see what they're trying to do. They're trying to do the whole, like, you know, he's going to eventually do this on his own, and it's going to be glorious for him or whatever. You know, he's going to get out there and he's going to do it. But he's kind of got to go round the tables right now, just being like, he said, do you want to hang out sometime? And they're like, nah, buddy, I've got far too many cool friends. And then they close the door and Hogan's in there smoking a cigar. Like...
It's the saddest thing. So Pittman, after asking Bobby the other week, when Mongo was right there,
yep.
Like, okay, so now I know I'm at least third. how about a big fat no? Mongo is the first person to actually say to him, mate, you're a core leader. You don't need a manager. Just crack on. And Pittman acts like this is a revelation. Like, yep. Oh, yeah.
And all Mongo has basically said to him is, you're an adult for fuck's sake.
Yeah.
You got this far in life, to WCW. Do you know how small a percentage of wrestlers make it to a major promotion, motherfucker? Get out of there and wrestle. And it's almost like he needs these pep talks, right? Mm-hmm. So, Mongo's a good guy for that, with obviously the sports background and everything. But it's like, I don't know, I get what they're trying to do with it. And I know it's not supposed to be humiliating. It's supposed to be kind of Pittman finds himself. Mm. But it's just a bit, watching him go around the houses like, was nobody got any spare management for Pittman? No. And he just sits there like looking at his shoes while everybody else is helping themselves to a slice of quiche and kind of partying.
Oh God, it's that. Yeah. But anyway, there is a wrestling match in the ring at the same time as this. Super Assis working over Stang from Stanger. With a standing backbreaker, double shoulder block, a power bomb. They give Sting a kick in.
Yeah.
He avoids a top rope splash to Sting, makes the tag to Luger, who runs wild. Ends with Luger putting the torture rack on one of them and Sting having the deathlock on the other. Strong, coherent showing for Stanger here.
Well, mainly for Sting, because Luger wins the match via torture rack, but Sting's theme plays.
It always annoys me when they get the theme slightly wrong. It always annoys me.
It's just like Luger's just like, already on the way to the back. Sting's in the ring posing. It's like the man called Sting. Big
Pitney. Babyface Lex Luger there, as opposed to heel Lex Luger, as we sometimes get. We'll figure that out. Mean Gene Okerlund is on the ramp where he lives, apparently with a sleeping bag. And he's speaking to Jimmy Hart and, quote, the son of Andre, the Giant.
I tell you, the record for coming out and stalling and saying fuck all has been broken this week. 96 is off to a blinder. Jimmy Hart has been jumping between people right now, managing in a slightly confusing manner. It's like, well, who the fuck have you got alliances with? It seems to be everybody. This is quite contradictory, Jimmy.
Yes.
Like, you can't be doing, or you can't just be part of every group, Jimmy. Mm. You can't manage everybody. You got to give all your management to one group. And he's just like, I'll just do what I want, 'cause I'm Jimmy Hart. And that's it. That's all he fucking says, basically. And Hogan, Flair, watch your backs. Bye. But he goes on and on and on.
Bloody, he just does. Mean Gene's in trouble this week because he was talking bullshit on the hotline. he said on the hotline that Ricky Steamboat was going to be at the Omni.
Old Dick Blood.
Was gonna, not to be confused with the Super Asses. he was going to be honored at the Omni on a WCW show, kind of suggesting that they're going to bring Steamboat in, to which Ricky Steamboat's lawyers went, no, he's not. This is not a conversation we've ever had.
Nice.
So this week, Steamboat, after getting wind of this, speaking to his lawyer, Gene Okerlund had to put out a message saying, no, he's not being honored at the Omni, and no, he's not associated with WCW. Didn't go as far as to admit he made the whole thing up. In this month, Mean Gene will do two absolute fucking blinders on the hotline.
Yeah, he's already, what was, is it the last one with the death?
Oh, this is three then.
Oh, this is three. Fucking hell. Because there was one where he essentially alludes to the fact Ric Flair may be dead. But it's not Ric Flair.
Yeah.
Like, at all, of course. But the way it's teased got a lot of people clicking clicking all those buttons.
Yeah, whatever the phone version of clickbait was, Mean Gene did it. Now, the other one was Mean Gene went on and said that the WWF are looking to copy WCW and bring in a faction of monsters called the Tunnel of Doom, to which Vince went, no, we're fucking not.
The Tunnel of Doom.
Yeah.
The Tunnel of Doom.
It sounds too much like the
fucking
Tunnel of Doom.
The fucking Tunnel of Doom. The Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
The fucking Tunnel of Doom.
The Tunnel of Doom.
Come on. Are you going to fucking make shit up? Like, I'm amazed, right, that he didn't just make his own dirt sheet and print whatever the fuck he wanted, because then he could point to it and go, hey, you can't sue me. I read it from this publication. Sue them instead. And he's cleverly disguised his ownership of it, and it's all based in Panama or something, so nothing can be done.
So
but I just, the tunnel of doom. Why, like, why would Vince take the of doom? And why would it be a tunnel? Why would it be a tunnel? Why would it be a...
I swear, I wonder whether Gene's either just
making... Do they
making
live in the tunnel?
I mean, I assume
do
the
they just hang
like,
out there? Where? Is it near a precinct?
I thought about this.
Little Londis on the corner for some cans? Like, what the fuck?
In the Londis.
Like, tunnels in a mountain where you could, you know, fucking snow could come down either end and lock you in for 2 weeks. That's scary.
Mm.
But most, if I was to hear Tunnel of Doom in the UK, I think like train tunnels, which, again, pretty dark. Pretty like, ooh, I wouldn't go into one of those. But you wouldn't just be hanging out. Like, if some gang came up with, like, we hang out in the tunnels, it'd be like, all right, fuck's your problem?
Fuck, I, like, well,
we all hang out at the park, or we hang out, you know, down the pub.
We
hang out at the hotel or the gym. So we hang out in the tunnels.
We hang out in the tunnels.
Where it's really echoey. And that's how they've all got to talk.
Who let that duck in?
Tunnel-themed gimmicks.
Yeah, I mean, whether or not it was going to be like a series of bad guys that came out a good guy,
Christ,
one after the other, like they were coming down at... I don't know. It wasn't real. So I don't know why we're trying to ascertain it.
You put a whole tunnel on the ramp. They only wrestle in the tunnel, but it's too dark for anybody to see. Wrestlers then don't have to actually work. They come out, pose, they play a load of pre-recorded noises, and that way you can just extend careers.
And they just come out afterwards and
the
and
fans.
Go, I won the fight, everybody.
The fans, yeah, it's the excitement of somebody emerging with the belt.
Yay! It's my turn to win the belt. Well
the
done.
The tunnel of doom, tunnel.
So out of the tunnel we go. Jimmy Hart says Hulk Hogan always advised him to keep his enemies closer and always switch his gears, both of which he's doing by managing multiple people. Which is the point that you were making.
The management roster is just thin as fuck. Pittman can't find a manager, for God's sakes. We know how thin the manager roster is. Come on, Jimmy. You don't need to lie to us. We've just seen him out there. Just trying to sell himself to Mongo. Just come on, Mongo. I'm a good wrestler. Please. He's like old Gil from The Simpsons. Oh, just one more chance, Mongo. Go on, just one chance.
Old Gil.
Fucking, they've turned Sergeant Pittman into old Gil. And he's out there going, I'll do what I want. Ah!
Oh, Gil's so coming back. That's great. So you know what, you've so expertly hit the bullseye on the Pittman segment tonight.
It's like
old Gil and per my last email.
Yeah, but it's like Pittman is it's like Gil. Gil was once a perfectly capable worker and he's still got it. There's an episode where Gil turns everything around and you know, actually comes into some money and everything. It's a later one, so it's not really great, but still. But you know, the skill is there. It's just he's downtrodden. And it's like, I get you want to sell it, but you're kind of, the desperation is a bit too strong here. It is very, come on, just give old Gil a chance. And he's ringing his wife like, I nearly had him, honey.
The giant here, he just comes out with some blinders. Hogan! Time after time, you hurt me emotionally and spiritually. And then you hit me with a chair. This is just weird bollocks from the mouth of Paul White.
I could take the spiritual abuse, I could take the emotional abuse, but I'm not having you hit me with a chair.
How has Hogan hurt him emotionally?
I want to know, how is it,
oh my
how is
God,
he hurt him spiritually?
How
has he hurt him spiritually? That's the thing. Emotionally,
your God is a lie.
You could spin it as he beat his dad or whatever.
But I wonder whether he hurts him emotionally because Hogan keeps calling him a stinky giant. That hurts my feelings.
The sit down segments.
You big stinky giant. Stop it. You hurt me emotionally.
It's the spiritual thing. Like, what does the giant believe in that Hulk Hogan has? Is it anti-Hulkamania?
Maybe he
and
doesn't...
the existence of Hulkamania hurts him spiritually.
Maybe he didn't believe in prayers.
Or vitamins.
Or vitamins.
Or shagging Bubba the Love Sponge wife.
He did that, did Hogan. I'm not saying that you can't hurt emotionally. You know, like I'm a fucking massive advocate for mental health.
Oh, God.
But it's more the fact that it's such a weird run-on sentence from Paul White in a blood feud.
It's the perfect example of a wrestling promo sentence, though.
Yes.
Like, you hurt me spiritually, you hurt me emotionally, and then you hit me with a chair. It's like, why would you just say physically? It just goes off. And that's like the beauty of the 80s, 90s promo, is it none of it makes fucking sense.
Was it Batista in 05 who went, weapons aren't only encouraged, they're allowed. Oh, bless your tracks. You're funnier now than you've ever been. Hogan, Giant promises to get Hogan like he's like he never has before. Well, like, I guess like come at him from the roof dressed as a spider.
Book a match and do it one-on-one fairly.
Madness. I prefer my idea. From the roof dressed as a spider. I'm going to come at you like I never have before. I'm going to dig
El Hijo del Arachna Man. And he's coming down just like, woo.
I'm going to dig a hole underneath you. Pop up like
only wrestles on all fours. He's just walking around, and they've got these other limbs just like stitched in, made of foam. He's just like,
I wish you'd stop calling me Stinky.
And then he hits a leg drop with all eight legs on Hogan. Oh my god.
That'd do it, wouldn't it?
He has to pull them all facing forward.
Like pipe cleaners, dragging them in.
Two of them come off, and he's holding them. He's just holding them in one hand. He's just trying to wrestle with one arm.
Bischoff, mate, if only you'd known us in 96, you'd have been fine.
You'd have been a multi-millionaire, even though you already were one.
Clash of the Champions coming live from Vegas on Tuesday, January the 23rd.
We run that town. That's our city. Yeah.
We run Vegas.
That's right. Fuck WWF. Yeah. Vegas. WCW town.
Double or nothing, baby.
Yeah. Entertainment capital of the world. Bischoff really gets all that shit in there.
He
this one.
Bloody loves
it. It's a buzzword.
He hits all the key tropes.
Even does, I think, doesn't like, welcome to Las Vegas. Welcome to fabulous Las Vegas. And it's like, fuck it all.
And with that, we come to our main event of the evening for Monday Night Raw. It is Hulk Hogan challenging Ric Flair for the WCW Championship. Boos for Hogan. And lots of similar Hogan merch in the crowd.
Well, they've already been chanting, for the Horseman. Yeah. Earlier in the night, so we're in a territory that maybe you wouldn't so much like the Hulkster here.
No,
this is I think wasn't the Omnia building Ole used to run regularly with GCW.
Oh God, yeah, I think NWA ran here. GCW ran here.
It was a stronghold for sure. It's like wrestling.
Hogan ain't welcoming.
Not Yankee wrestling.
It's a standard Hogan-Flair contest with Hogan no-selling almost everything from the first part until Hogan gets his leg worked over after a chop block.
Yes.
Figure four attempt gets a big cheer from the crowd. Don't mention that, Mark Madden, on the hotline. Hart hits the ring to distract Hogan, which leads to Flair landing a cheap shot and a suplex. Hogan, of course, powers up. Before he can get back into the match, Arn Anderson hits the ring. Brass knucks Hogan. They're still in his undercrackers. His pecker's fine. And Hogan no-sells it. Straight back up.
It's a fucking joke. I know you're Hulk Hogan. I know you are the immortal Hulk Hogan still. You are that character at this time. I get it. You were still quite popular. And, you know, you're the fucking Hulkster. But no-selling brass knuckles.
Yeah.
After they'd already been used earlier in the night to great effect. And he's just like, boop, gets clean on the face. And Hogan goes, oh, no, back up. Like, it's not even like a second. It's immediate.
No.
Like, he just no-sells brass knuckles and then puts everybody else down with them eventually and they work.
Yeah. this leads to the ref disqualifying Ric Flair because of the brass knuckles brought into match by Arn Anderson. So it's a non-bloody finish. And the moment the match happens, remember that bell sounds, all four horsemen run to the ring. And then we get like just Hogan bullshit.
They cower before the mighty Hulk Hogan. Hulk's almost about to beat the fuck out of them. He's got the brass knuckles and they're all on their knees like, no, Terry, fucking do it, Terry. Don't hit me. And, you know, he stood there with the brass knuckles going, I'm going to hit you all in order. Pillman, Benoit, Anderson, and fucking you, Flair, you get to net. And then somebody comes in from the back from the Dungeon of Doom. And then he, instead of just defeating the horseman or leaving, Hogan proceeds to start to attack the horseman. The horseman peel out, defeats the Dungeon of Doom with the help of Randy Savage.
Oh, yeah.
Largely just Hogan on his own.
Well, there's a key bit here.
You've just destroyed two stables. Cowering before Hulk Hogan, one of which is your world fucking champion. I get that he's got brass knuckles, but why wouldn't they peel out of there? Why they're on their knees?
as he looks like. Now, the only other time I've seen something like this with one man holding a weapon with four or five people kind of begging off. There's a match in Japan where a guy pulls out a gun.
Yeah.
This isn't a gun.
If it was like a flaming, you know, barbed wire bat, or it was a 2x4 with some nails in it, I'd be like, whoa. He's got the brass knucks in his hand. He's going to have to wind up and swing at you, and you're all right next to the rope. Why the fuck haven't you all peeled out?
Right.
And then Dungeon comes out and they get it, and then they do peel out, and it's like,
but no, we've got to talk about how the dungeon came out, because there's a lot to
unpack
here. So Giant comes out through the crowd with a wooden stool.
Yep.
Not a steel chair.
Yep.
A wooden fucking stool.
Yep, because it's harder. And look at that craftsmanship.
Beautiful carpentry.
That is a lacquered stool.
he saves Hogan from a shellacking with the lacquer.
Yes.
And saves him by pulling the stool away. Hogan's able to boot Giant out of the ring, because it's going to be Hogan that gets him. Hogan now wins by DQ. Did they change the rules, or did I just write that down wrong? Either way, it's a schmoz. Giant outside the ring, losing his mind, and he's trying to pick a wooden table up. He's just getting all, I'm emotionally hurt! He goes to go back in the ring. Zodiac stops him. And did you hear what Zodiac says?
No, but I heard him being like, no, yes, no, no, hurt, hurt, hurt. And then you hear Sullivan go, it's done, man. Like, what is it he says?
He says, no, friend, hurt.
Oh, right.
Friend.
Well, all I heard was Sullivan going, stop talking, it's over to him. That's what it sounded like.
As if to go, right, off
as
it,
in,
off
shut the fuck
now.
Up, it shows off the air.
The dungeons skulk off after that. Maybe that's what they were saying. But that weirdly plays into something coming up.
What if Zodiac was just, every time Ed arrived at the building, by some comedic happenstance, in like a slapstick way, he just bumps his head, just like, oop, just knocks it on the back of a shelf as he's like tying up his boots. And then next thing you know, he's got his scissors and everything. That all just goes, he just starts painting himself up, and all he can say is yes, no. And this was him kind of coming to, and Sullivan's like, let's get you in the back before you remember anything else.
Post-break, Savage and Hogan are in the ring with Gene Okerlund. It's the Nacho Man, it's the Huckster, and Scheme Gene.
And it's time for possibly the most forced Hulk Hogan sentence in order to, like, hey, kids, like, you know, I'm cool, I'm down with the young people.
I wonder if it's the bit where, as Hogan says, Savage's business has become his business and vice versa. And the challenge is thrown down next week for Flair and Anderson to take on Hogan and Savage. And Savage says they may have some secret weapons of their own. Hogan having the brass knucks. Hogan then says, once they go to infinity and beyond.
I wonder where he got that one from.
Toy Story in cinemas now. Once they go to infinity and beyond. All right, Tim Allen. It's the second Home Improvements reference of the night. In their tag match against, quote, any or all four of the Shetland ponies.
Yeah, so not only a Buzz Lightyear quote, but fucking Shetland ponies?
Yeah.
What?
Then he'll chop down the beanstalk and defeat the stinky giant.
It's like he had to do dad duty, and he took his kids to see Toy Story, then got home. They were still being a bit loud, so he was like, just fucking have some sweets, sit down, put on Nat Geo. And it's an episode about Shetland ponies, and he's just like, oh, use this.
That'll
do it. This is good shit.
An interesting bit here as we coming off air.
Yeah.
So we've got Bischoff, we've got Mongo, and we've got Heenan.
Mm-hmm.
Bischoff says members of the exec committee have signed off on a match for next week for Monday Night Nitro, the tag match we just heard.
Mm-hmm.
Bischoff goes on to put themselves over, saying, we are number one, numbers talk, everyone else watches. Mongo then says, if you want to watch Pretenders, put the other channel on. The Contenders are on WCW. Then they look to Heenan, as if to go, hey, hey, to which Heenan refuses to join in with this masturbatory banter.
Yup.
And then just turns it back to Horseman and Hogan and Savage, suggesting, oh, maybe Jimmy Hart will be the referee for next week. All the while, I think we've talked about this before, Bobby Heenan flat out refuses to join in with the mudslinging at WWE.
I think, you know, there was a certain element of, there still is, obviously, wrestling's a business that is built on a lot of honor-based traditions, and mm-hmm. one of the biggest is, you know, not shitting on other promoters and stuff. And I think, especially if somebody's made you, or if somebody's kind of given you a big platform and done a lot for you, and it wasn't exactly like, you know, a bad reason Heenan was let go. I think it was just WWF was restructuring, reshuffling, and couldn't really afford it.
It was moving in a different direction. And
yeah, it's sort of like, I think part of me feels whenever you see these moments like Medusa with the belt in the bin and like this, it feels like Heenan, you know, in a heartbeat would be back in the fold if he could be, because gold, right, and memories, and it's not quite as like aggressively back and forth about the opposition, and it just feels like they tried a lot to get him to kind of throw away the respect, well, not really the respect, but like throw away the ties.
Yes.
And it's not something he was willing to do, and it's really kind of, on reflection, it's like, good on you, man. Like, good on you for not, because it's all too easy to just turn into, you know, somebody who's just like, yeah, fuck him. Mm-hmm. Like, and he doesn't, he kind of stands still and just holds on to it.
I am confused as to why Heenan's sign-off was, thank you, Diamond Dallas, thank you very much.
I don't know
what that was about. Maybe we'll learn more in the weeks to come. I don't know. I genuinely was like, why is he thanking Daz Page as the show goes off air? Is Bobby Heenan?
We'll find out.
Very strange. But, from The Observer.
Yeah.
Hulk Hogan rearranged all the planned booking at the last minute, as the original plans were for Flair versus Sting and Luger versus Savage for next week. They were going to do disputed finishes that would lead to rematches.
Sorry, I was going to hit myself in the head with this microphone a bit.
To do rematches in the following week. Anderson and Pillman were supposed to face Sullivan and Hugh Morris in another angle. So Hogan wasn't factored into the stuff with Flair and Sting and Luger. So he went, you know something, brother? I'd like to be. Thank you. So Hogan played his creative control, got himself a tag match against Flair and Anderson with Savage.
Oh, Terry, what you fucking like.
Classic Tez.
One little nice touch I did enjoy was at the end of the episode, after it goes off there and fades to black, you get a little 1996, like, New Year wish card from WCW.
Yeah.
But if you read it in order, it's a nice touch, but it reads, WCW Happy Nitro TNT Year 96, if you read it from top to bottom. And I quite like that.
Oh, that's nice. They half
don't dead open inside.
Of all the things that were happening this week on Nitro, there was one really key thing that was not acknowledged at all from Starrcade, and that was the situation around the US Championship, because that was technically our main event for Starrcade that we didn't see. Sasaki versus One Man Gang. Nothing mentioned on Japanese TV, nothing mentioned on US TV. I guess we'll figure that out in a few
weeks.
Doesn't
Gang quickly drop it?
I think possibly.
Yeah, it's kind of like a belt reset, just going, eh.
Basically. So that's Nitro.
Yeah.
There you go. It was a very horseman-heavy production this week.
But it had to be for the territory they were in, I think.
Yeah, I think. But then, even then, like, they didn't, like, give them anything super substantial.
No, but sometimes just seeing the individuals is enough, you know?
Yeah. Kind of like them to maybe...
It would have been nice to have done a horseman versus somebody match.
Yeah, like an A-man tag where they get a nice feel-good win. And then you can still do Hogan Flair at the end if you
feel
want.
Feel-good win. For the viewers there, maybe. But not for the ones at home.
It'd be feel-good for the Omni, maybe. What are you working on this week, Sound Driver?
You know, it's super secret. I'm working on super secret shit right now.
Oh!
Super, super secret.
I like super, super secret stuff.
It's fun, but there's a lot of work. A lot of work.
I excite. You will have on the YouTube channel today, as this goes out, predictions for Double or Nothing this weekend. You'll have live reactions with Adam and Andrew as well.
Ooh.
And on the weekend, a little video I did called The Truth About Nick Khan.
You better be careful in what you say.
I've been very careful.
Man's getting the keys to the kingdom.
He is indeed. And I just, it's more of a humanizing effort to kind of go, he's a real boy.
Yeah, I think when the Nick Khan argument, it's like, yeah, there's a lot of changes and it might not be changes that people want to see, but I feel like he was brought in as almost like a restructurer.
He was indeed.
To use his level of knowledge about production and connections and stuff to just change everything. And so he's only really doing his job, as horrible as it is to say, or he's just doing his job because, you know, a lot of bad comes from, you know, situations in which people are released and everything like that. But it's weird because it is, if it's the role he was brought in to do, then he's doing well at it. Now he's pretty much in control. So
Interesting times. Did I'm you looking forward to watching that, man.
Did you know he was an usher at WrestleMania 9?
No, that's really cool.
Mm-hmm. We go deep on Nick Khan.
That sounds weird. On the YouTube channel over the weekend. And until we are next back together, he is at The Sound Driver on Twitter. I'm at Tom Gavlod. We're together. We're at God.
Never kissed my dogs.
He did. He fucking did. Didn't do that. Tom Campbell kisses dogs.
Shh, don't tell him that!
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.